From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Oh, my goodness. You are too kind. Thank you. We have got a great show for you today. Dr. Phil will be stopping by, so if you've got any problems, he'll solve them. But first, a program note. Last week during our show, Carl recreated a quote from the president of Pakistan, Asif Ali Zardari. He was talking about vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin. It went like this.
Now I know why the whole world is crazy about you.
But President Zardari's comment did not play well back home in Pakistan. A radical mosque there issued a fatwa against him for saying that. They accused him of, quote, indecent gestures, filthy remarks, and a repeated praise of a non-Muslim lady wearing a short skirt, unquote. So, Carl is joining us this week via secure line from an undisclosed location. Carl, how are things in the bunker?
They're okay, Peter, except Dick Cheney keeps hogging the remote.
My advice, Carl, do not aggravate him. But anybody out there who wants to get into trouble, give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Di Clark from Chatham, New Jersey, which is right next door to Berkeley Heights, New Jersey.
I'm well aware. My home stomping grounds. Why many is the time I would go over to Chatham to stand in front of their 7-Eleven instead of ours. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah, I know. Town.
It is. It's very upscale. What do you do there in beautiful Chatham?
I am a freelance translator and interpreter of French.
Oh, really?
For lawyers and courts.
Can you translate "forget about it" into French?
No.
All right then. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Di, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's Reliable Sources column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Roxanne.
Hello.
Next, say hello to comedian and writer Paul Prevenza.
Bonjour.
Hello, Paul.
Bonjour, Di.
Bonjour.
Also say hello to television personality and the man behind Morocco180.com, Mr. Morocco.
Hello, Mo.
Hi, Di.
It's wonderful to meet you all in person at last.
Di, you're going to play Who's Carol this time. Carol Castle is going to read you three quotes in the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carol Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am ready.
All right. Here we go. Here is your first quote.
It's like a big cow pie with a little bit of marshmallow inside.
That was Texas Republican Congressman Louis Gohmert expressing his party's antipathy earlier this week towards what?
To the first draft of the solution to the bailout.
Yes, the $700 billion bailout bill last weekend. Yes, she did it. She's good. Last weekend, leaders of both parties in Congress emerged from a conference room, their ties and toupees askew. They announced they had given birth to a bouncing baby bailout bill. Then on Monday, a bunch of members of the House, both Republicans and Democrats, voted against it. The GOP naysayers said they were insulted by a partisan speech Nancy Pelosi gave right before the vote, and frankly, they may have had a point. This is from the transcript. House GOP leader John Boehner, what a guy. They say John Boehner gets his looks from his dad. He's a plastic surgeon, you know what I mean? And where's Eric Cantor, the gentleman from Virginia? Is your family happy, Eric, or do you go home every night? Thank you very much. It's unclear in the transcript whether Speaker Pelosi then said, try the veal.
She turned to Joan Rivers.
I know. Well, anyway, they made up. They sent flowers to all the Republicans. They told them no, they did not look fat in their off-the-rack sport coats. They were very nice. Now, what do you guys think of it? You know, everybody, it seems, hates it, except everybody thinks that it's absolutely necessary. Why is it absolutely necessary that we pass such an awful bill?
Because that's what we do. I just think it's great how it's cut back on our illegal immigration problem.
How so?
This Wall Street. Because third world countries, people are going, nah, we'll stay here.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. That's
why are we going to schlep all the way over there?
Immigration deterrent.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an immigration deterrent.
It's a very deft system they got working.
Now, I didn't know all those undocumented workers from Mexico were Jewish.
They speak Yiddish. A lot of people.
All these guys down in Guadalajara, they're going, why schlep over the desert?
Yeah.
Why schlep all the way over there? Why? Learn Spanish for nothing. 700 billion, but for you. No, I got an uncle in the finance business.
All right. Di?
Yes.
Your next quote is from the very beginning of a momentous event that happened on Thursday night.
Can I call you Joe?
That was somebody trying to start something off on an informal note. What was it?
It was the debate between Joe Biden and Moose Sarah Palin.
Yes, indeed. Governor Sarah Palin. Very good. McCain, Obama, who cares? The biggest event of this election was Thursday's VP Smackdown. In this corner, weighing 180 pounds plus 2 pounds of hair plugs, the Silver Fox, the great debater who perhaps goes on a little long, but still, God love him, knows what he's talking about because he's personally met just about everybody worth meeting, from the president of Georgia down to the Joe, the conductor on the Amtrak train who concerns, he totally understands, Joe Biden! And in this corner, Sarah Barracuda, the folksy fox, the gun-toting, glasses-wearing, gleefully glib goddess of gosh darn goodness, Sarah Palin! The debate ended up being kind of a bust. Biden took up the whole 90 minutes with his first answer. And Governor Palin ended up being distracted by a shiny object on moderator Gwen Ifill's blouse.
I think that with the debate, she demonstrated that she's every bit as qualified to be Commander-in-Chief as Gina Davis was when she was Commander-in-Chief. I mean, the reckless behavior, Gina Davis drove off a cliff with Susan Sarandon.
Nonetheless, she ended up in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
All right, here, Di, is your last quote.
The embarrassing thing is that my salad dressing is now outgrossing my films.
That was a famous actor being needlessly embarrassed about his legacy. He died this week at the age of 82. Who?
It was wonderful Paul Newman.
Yes, it was Paul Newman, of course.
I'm sad to say that I once had lunch with Paul Newman, only in the sense that he was having lunch at a restaurant in Poughkeepsie, New York, where I worked at the time, and I was there too.
Wow. Did you go up to him and say hello?
No, I was too shy.
Oh,
but you know
and
what, Di?
That's the coolest thing, Di.
You know what, Di? He's telling that same story.
The reason Di didn't go up to him is because she was eating a salad with wishbone dressing. Now do you feel good about yourself?
The actor, race car driver, devoted husband, and unlikely food impresario was remembered this week as a guy who pretty much everybody loved. What's odd is that, as he himself predicted, as you heard, that since he stopped appearing in movies a few years ago and instead devoted his energies to the food company, which raised money for charity, most young people today probably will think of him as the reclusive, strangely handsome, and possibly fictional inventor of the Fig Newman. Carl, how did Di do in our quiz?
Well, she couldn't do better. She had 3 correct answers. So, Di, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Oh, Carl.
Isn't it nice?
How wonderful that sounds to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, guys, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paul, Barack Obama's political opponents and satirists, may I say, have been waiting for him to make his big mistake. Well, this week he did, when he apparently forgot what?
To show up at the debate.
No. It was a vice presidential debate. He didn't have to be at that one.
Oh, that debate.
big mistake.
Oh, my gosh. Will he be sleeping in the couch? Yes, he will.
I really should have gotten out of bed this week.
Yeah. So I asked Roxanne. She seems to know.
Oh, I totally know.
I know. She's doing that cocky, really, you don't know that? She's the one in the back of the room going, I'm just so horrible on the test. Oh, 100.
love this is that it's such a guy thing to do. He's bragging about her, and he's saying how great she is, and he says, we're about to celebrate our 15th anniversary. And the campaign has to release a statement going, 16.
Right. He essentially forgot how long he's been married. At an event in Washington, just as Roxanne says, Obama referred to his upcoming 15th wedding anniversary, and the conservative blogosphere pounced. Barack and Michelle Obama were married in October 1992, which means it's really his 16th anniversary. Ha!
Ah.
Who's the Messiah now, Mr. Bad at Math?
Ah.
So immediately, as you can imagine, the McCain campaign threw up an attack ad with the announcer saying, let me see if I can do this correctly. Barack Obama. He lied and said that this was his 15th wedding anniversary, the crystal anniversary, not the 16th, which is the China anniversary. If we can't trust him to give the right symbolic gift, can we trust him to lead? Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Bob from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am pretty well. What do you do there in St. Louis?
I actually work at the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Were you guys in St. Louis really excited to have the campaign descend upon St. Louis for the vice presidential debate?
I actually drove by the Washington University campus the night of the debate, and it was nice to have a media circus here for a change when we weren't underwater.
That's true. Bob, it's great to have you with us. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Bob's topic?
That staycation is looking more and more alluring.
This week we read a story about the difficulties of modern travel, and it reinforced our desire to explore the world via our couch in the National Geographic Channel. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of travel mishaps. Choose the real story. You'll get Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am ready.
All right, Bob. Let's first hear from Roxanne Roberts.
Hate flying? Long lines, tiny seats, lousy service? Well, consider yourself lucky. Passengers on Chinese Shandong Airline flight CRJ-7 arrived safely at Zhenzhou last week, but the plane broke down immediately after landing, and the passengers had to get out and push it off the runway. At first, airport ground staff were called to move the plane, but they couldn't budge it, so a number of the 69 men and women on board were recruited to help. It took the entire group almost 2 hours to shove it onto a side lane. Quote, thank God it was only a 20-ton medium-sized aeroplane, said one of the workers. If it were a big plane, it would have knocked us out. No word if the passengers had to unload their own luggage, but I'm guessing yes.
Passengers having to push their own plane off the runway in China. Your next story of vacationing woes comes from Paul Prevenza.
Andy Shirofsky and his wife took 5-year-old daughter Tabitha on a Disney family cruise for the birthday of every kid's dream. After a day of cruising family fun and buying stuffed Disney characters in the gift shop, the Shirofskys went back to their cabin. They set Tabitha up with her new stuffed toys and a tea party set and went into the tiny bathroom to freshen up. Through the open door, they could hear Tabitha's glee as she said, tea for Eeyore, tea for Ariel, tea for Mickey, and they smiled at each other until Andy said, wait a second, we didn't get her a Mickey, did we? They peer into the cabin to see Tabitha serving up tea to a house cat-sized Norway rat. It was huge, said Shirofsky. Luckily, it never got close enough to do any harm before it ran away. I'm shocked. You'd expect an operation like Disney to have higher standards than this. A Disney spokesman said Norway rats are a problem on all seagoing vessels and that the ship and its operations will be reviewed immediately. There was no comment about whether or not the rodent wore little white gloves.
A real-life Mickey Mouse, as it were, appears in a Disney cruise. Your last story of traveling travesties comes from Mo Rocca.
At the Norman Fell Memorial Nature Preserve in Yorba Linda, California, ecotourists experience an astonishing diversity of climates, including desert, rainforest, mountains, and tundra, spread over 4 acres of land. Manatees sunbathe under the gaze of giraffes. Pythons hiss at polar bears. Penguins shadow box with pandas. House cats hop from hippo to hippo. And stalagmites are everywhere. But it is the world-renowned herd of purebred Yemenese yaks that most flock to see. The pink milk from these yaks is said to possess magical properties. Among these, it is believed that the drinker is forever relieved of sniffles. But last June, when a group of tourists became sick on milk from a yak with mono, they sought relief from Pepto-Bismol. Unfortunately, there was none left. That is, until the preserve's director refilled the empty bottles with the yak milk. Quote, I figured they were already sick, end quote, said director Richard Klein. The tourists only got sicker.
All right, then. Let's review your choices. From Roxanne, passengers on an airplane have to get out and push in China. From Paul Prevenza, a family on a Disney cruise discovers a rodent mascot they did not want. And from Morocco, tourists at the Norman Fell Nature Preserve get sick on bad pink yak milk. Your job, Bob, is to pick one of them. One of those stories really happened this week to a traveler or a group thereof. So, give us the real story.
Let's see. As much as I love a good yak milk story.
Sure. Who doesn't, ultimately?
I don't know. It's very compelling. But, you know, I'm going to have to go with the one that, surprisingly enough, seems the most plausible to me, given the state of airlines and the lack of perks therein. I'm going to have to go with the first one.
Pushing the airplane off the runway in China, having to get out and push. All right, then. Now, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to an expert in this kind of travel.
You know, we think things are bad here in the United States, and certainly there have been cutbacks, but this is the first time that I've ever heard of an airline that had to ask its own passengers to get out and help push the plane.
That was
all right.
Benjamin Matsuba, who writes the Today in the Sky blog for USA Today. He was expressing his wonder and amazement at the Chinese passengers who had to push the plane. Hmm. Congratulations, you got it right. You will win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Bob, and thank you so much for playing.
Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for the game where we ask very well-known people about very obscure things. Dr. Phil McGraw is a friend of Oprah. He's a best-selling author, a master at resolving tough situations. He's best known for the advice he doles out to guests who come on his TV show looking for tough love and folksy homespun tips. He's faced down feuding mothers and daughters and couples who cheat on each other. He's never faced us. Dr. Phil, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, I'm glad to be there, I think. It depends on what you're going to tell me.
Well, I know. That's actually kind of true. So, by the way, I mean, Dr. Phil, is that the appropriate term of address, or do you prefer the more the less formal Phil?
I'll just leave that up to whatever makes you feel best.
All right, thank you. I've always heard you were easygoing. Well, we wanted to talk to you about your remarkable career. I actually, until we looked into it, did not know how you first met Oprah. It turns out that you helped her with her famous libel trial, or slander trial, down in Texas. You were actually a jury consultant. But she says, and she's talked about it, how taken she was with you because of she says, both your wisdom, but also she says she loves what everybody calls Dr. Philisms. Is that the correct technical term?
Well, that's what she calls them. So if that's what she calls them, then yes, that's correct.
That's what they are, yes. That's what they are. And these, of course, are your famous catchphrases that we've all become familiar with in your show and your books. You know, like, this ain't my first rodeo. That's a famous one. Did somebody write stupid on my forehead? Now, is that how you grew up talking in Texas?
Well, you know, everybody around America and the world, because we're on in so many foreign countries, they always talk about those things that I say, and all of my friends in Texas are saying, what? What did he say? What are you talking about?
People say that one of the things you specialize in, one of the things that's made you so popular and successful, is tough love. You don't take a lot of guff. You're not one of those therapists or advice people who sort of spend a lot of time expressing understanding or sympathy. You tell people to shape up, and they got to face the facts and deal with what they're dealing with.
Well, look, I don't have a lot of time with people when I'm working with them on the show, but I have to say I've been very much that way all of my life. But let me ask you something. Don't you know the truth when you hear it? I mean, like, if somebody's telling you, hey, it's going to be okay, there's that little voice in your head, if it's not going to be, and you know it.
Right.
People know the truth when they hear it. So why pussyfoot around? Why mince words? I mean, let's just call it what it is. And so I do tell people the truth as I see it. My view is if somebody wants to come and talk to me, they ought to not have to guess where I stand when I get through talking to them.
Isn't it nice, though, and this is just an opposing point of view, just for the sake of argument, isn't it nice, though, to be lied to a little? I mean, to say to somebody, oh, you really are a wonderful person.
Yeah, what you got a mother for, Peter. That's what your mom's doing. I don't want to get out of my lane and get in the mom lane, okay?
All right, so I just got to ask you, but there are all these situations in life where, you know, sometimes maybe a little dishonesty is good. So here you are, and you're with your wife, who is also an accomplished author, and she says, honey, does this make me look fat? And you say...
Of course it doesn't. Okay, listen. I've been married 32 years.
Yes.
And I did that by being smart, okay?
Yes.
I understand the words, yes, dear.
Yes.
And how can I help?
Okay.
But you know, one of the things that I get from Robin sometimes when I go home, if I'll say something a little, maybe a little assertive, she'll turn around and look at me and say, don't you Dr. Phil me, buddy. She said, you do that stuff on TV. You're at home now, buddy. So I'm kind of like I've always said, I'm tell it like it is, Phil, on TV, and I'm hear how it is, Phil, when I'm
exactly.
at home.
We do want you to play our quiz, but we had this idea. We had such this rare opportunity to have you on our show. We don't have any problems, but we've got these friends who do, and maybe if we could tell you about them, you could help out. There's like this one friend, and he's an older guy, and he's decided to partner up with somebody young. She's not quite as smart as he is, but she's more popular than he is, and he's beginning to feel a little bad about that. So how do you deal if you're the older partner in the relationship being put in the shadow by the younger, more vivacious and popular member of the couple?
Gee, I haven't a clue who you could be talking about.
Well, we were trying to keep this anonymous.
Since I'm sure this is just Bob and Betty from somewhere in USA,
yes.
I'd say, hey, buddy, kick back and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. That's actually good advice. We have another friend, and he's a guy. He's very disciplined, very cool, reserved, not good at expressing his emotions. But he's partnered with somebody who's just the opposite. So how and sometimes he's criticized. How would you teach somebody who's too cool, who's too reserved, to sort of let out his feelings and whoop some ass, say, if that's what's needed?
Well, gee, again, I'm overwhelmed by your transparency. But you know, cool is in right now. I think cool is in. So I think I would stay with the cool. And you know, you talk about these partners that you pick.
Yeah.
He's picked a partner that sometimes has to open his mouth just to change feet. So maybe being cool is a good counterbalance. I don't know. What do you think?
It's possible. It's possible, I guess. Well, Dr. Phil, we're so delighted to have you with us. We've asked you here to play a game. We're calling...
America Turns Its Lonely Eyes to You, George Francis Train.
Maybe you, like a lot of Americans, aren't really thrilled with the two choices we've got left for president. Well, historically, at least, you would not be alone. The website weirduniverse.net recently reviewed some of the more colorful fringe presidential candidates from the past. We're going to ask you three questions about people who might have, maybe even should have been president. If you get two right, you win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice giving his acceptance speech on their home answering machine.
Oh, how special would that be?
Very special, Dr. Phil. Very special. Carl, who is Dr. Phil McGraw playing for?
Dr. Phil is playing for Linda Mann of Woodland Hills, California.
All right, ready to go?
All right, Linda, it's you and me.
There you go. First question. Let's start with the aforementioned George Francis Train. He was a railway tycoon, oddly enough, and a famous adventurer. He ran for president as an independent in 1872. He might have been doomed in his campaign by a self-imposed handicap, though. What was it? A, he wouldn't ask for people's votes. He would say, quote, and thus I demand your allegiance, unquote. Was it B, a confirmed believer in nudism? He would routinely walk around public parks in the buff. Or C, he refused to shake voters' hands, saying skin-to-skin contact would drain his, quote, psychic force.
President Howie Mandel.
Well, I have to say, if B and C went together, if he was walking around nude, I'm guessing people wouldn't want to shake his hand.
That's probably true.
Because you always say, I wonder where that's been. In
you
his
know.
Case, you know where
exactly.
it's been. So I'm going to say A.
You're going to say A, that he wouldn't ask for people's vote. He would just demand their allegiance. No, actually, it was C. He refused to shake people's hands.
Oh, really?
Really. To indicate a warm greeting, he would shake his own hand in front of the person. You have two more chances here. Let's go for the next question.
I feel such pressure now that I've blown the first one.
Well, yeah. That's how we like to arrange it.
So I got to go two. I got to go twofer here.
Okay. Go twofer. Our next candidate is Leonard Jones, who ran in every presidential election from the late 1840s to the 1860s, as well as running for the Senate, Congress, and governor of Kentucky, all unsuccessfully. He basically had one plank in his platform. If elected, Jones promised to help every American do what? A, draw their salaries in solid gold, B, live forever, or C, travel to the moon.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to say... draw their salaries in solid gold.
Right. Everybody would just walk around with ingots and pay for their whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a beautiful idea. But no, it was actually Live Forever. That was his nickname, in fact. It was Live Forever Jones. He was the candidate and only member of the High Moral Party, which held that people could live forever through prayer and fasting. Its platform died with him. Here, Dr. Phil, is your last question. Our last candidate is Homer Tomlinson, who came in third behind Lyndon Johnson and Barry Goldwater in the 1964 presidential election. However, he recovered well from his loss. What did he go on to do? A, he founded the Taco Bell restaurant chain. B, he walked around the world dragging 48 feet of cast iron chain behind him the whole way. Or C, he declared himself king of the world.
Gosh. It was a chihuahua that started Taco Bell.
Yeah. Well.
So I'm going to cross that one off.
Yeah,
and if he dragged the chain around the world and three-quarters of its water, he would have drowned. So I'm going to say declared himself king of the world.
You're right, sir. Very well done.
Okay, I finished strong.
You did. You finished strong.
I like that. See, I've always said it's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Well, exactly. No, but you still lost. You're so finished, we're not even going to roll credits. That is incredible.
To explain, 1964 was Homer Tomlinson's third presidential run as the candidate of the Theocratic Party. He decided that he was tired of messing around for small stakes after that loss, and so declared himself king of the world, and he ruled us until his death from a folding chair throne in a hotel room in Jerusalem. Carl, how did Dr. Phil do in our quiz, Carl?
Well, Dr. Phil salvaged the last question, Peter, but he needed at least two to win for Linda Mann.
Dr. Phil, I just want to say, even though you didn't win, you did a wonderful job, and we're really glad to have you.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, you see what I mean? You see what I mean? It's useful. It's nice. Dr. Phil is the star of the Dr. Phil Show. He's the author of many, many books, including the upcoming Preparing for the 7 Worst Days of Your Life, coming out in November. Dr. Phil, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you soon.
I hope so. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, as you can imagine, things are tense on Wall Street, so tense that the New York Stock Exchange is having trouble finding people willing to do what?
Would this be willing to ring the opening or closing bell?
That would be it. Very good. Ever since the go-go 90s, celebrities and notables have been coming out to the balcony to ring the opening bell. That is a trademarked phrase. At the New York Stock Exchange. But for some reason, nobody wanted to do it this week. The Broadway actress they had scheduled for Monday, one Missy Pyle, backed out at the last minute, presumably because she didn't want to go down in history as a kind of financial typhoid Mary. One publicist who booked celebs for the gig said, and this is a real quote, "Right now, it can be a little bit like being asked to blow the foghorn on the Titanic," unquote. Paul, we've got just the thing for your office or kitchen wall. A group of professional clowns announced plans to debut what in 2009?
I'm sorry, a group of professional clowns.
Yes.
That would be pie throne paintings.
No.
Seltzer bottle paintings.
No.
Paintings, all hundreds of them coming out of one car.
No. I'll give you a hint. Mr. July is Bozo.
Oh, a calendar.
Yes.
Oh,
that's good. What kind of calendar?
Naked clown calendar.
A naked clown calendar.
That went without saying, I thought.
No, 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 no. You had to say it. That's yeah. Right.
Here you go.
That's right. 16 recent graduates from the Clown Conservatory decided to put on their red wigs and unusually large shoes and nothing else in order to display their talents in, quote, a myriad of positions in an extended 16-month calendar to be released in 2009. The official website explains that proceeds will go to benefit multiple sclerosis research, and they also promise the calendar will answer many questions such as, what's Unicycle Girl's favorite holiday? What do clowns eat for Thanksgiving? And in how many uncomfortable places can one person place a balloon? Paul, Professor Kyle Volk's history class at the University of Montana has a lot of things that most college classes have. It's got lectures, assigned reading, homework, but it also has one thing that, as far as we know, is a first on college campuses. What?
I'm thinking about a hint.
Okay. Well, this is true. The professor has to interrupt his class once or twice a session and recommend that the students get lunch at a particular place.
He has a sponsor?
He has a commercial sponsor.
There
That's right.
There we go.
Namely, the El Diablo burrito stand. This is why we presume Professor Volk told his students that the pilgrims and Indians shared a bountiful meal of maize and El Diablo chicken quesadillas at the first Thanksgiving dinner. The Montana's history department hopes the sponsorship is, quote, a witty way to draw attention to their dwindling budget. And Professor Volk does his best to work El Diablo into as many topics as possible. He pastes El Diablo stickers on tests. He prints the burrito logo on his syllabus, and he makes sure students now know that the Bay of Pigs incident really happened at the Bay of Delicious Carnitas. Roxanne, a New York bank robber, fled the scene without the loot when a teller used what devastating weapon to fend her off?
The robber was a female.
Yes. Although that's irrelevant to this solution.
The solution. So she didn't say, you look fat in that mask?
I'll give you a hint. Yeah. You want a hint?
I would love a hint.
Yeah, like that's going to work.
Sarcasm.
Yes, sarcasm. It's the New York way. A female bank robber approached a teller at the Roslyn Savings Bank in Center Reach, New York, and announced that she was robbing the bank. She didn't show a weapon. And the teller, in a New York state of mind, said, quote, are you serious? Her scorn was so burning that the robber turned and fled the scene. Police said they hadn't yet apprehended the perp, but said, quote, yeah, like she's going to be able to get away.
She's not qualified to rob a bank.
Exactly. It is true. It's amazing how political ads are, like, completely suffusing everybody's minds. In the morning, I say, girls, you have to get up and go to school. I'm your father, and I approve of this message. And my kids are like, Peter Sagal, is he truly prepared to make our lunches? Yesterday, he gave me salami with cheese when I specifically told him not to use the cheese. Peter Sagal, a father we just can't trust.
You should not bail out their allowances.
No, I shouldn't. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, or you can visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Denise from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hey, Denise, how are you?
Doing great, just dodging the hurricane.
There you go. How are things in Raleigh?
Not too bad. We just got done with Hot and Horrible, and now we're going on to Too Darn Cold.
Yeah, now are you one of the places in the American Southeast that has had been hit by gas shortages?
Yeah, actually a lot of the pumps have paper bags over them.
Wow.
And so do the vendors.
So does that mean you're all sort of going back to a pre-industrial economy?
I think we were already there, actually.
Really? Well, welcome to our show, Denise. Carl Castle will now read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Yay, you bet.
Okay, here's your first limerick.
Some senses just add to our woes. When the wind is wrong, this one sure blows. Are we unsatisfactory in matters olfactory? Why should we construct a fake
nose?
Exactly right. Ever watched your dog sniffing another dog's behind and thought, man, if only I had an olfactory instrument that sensitive? Thanks to scientists at MIT, your day is almost here. In a paper published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, biological engineers revealed that they had developed a process that can identify the proteins that compose odors that may unlock the mystery of how smell really works. This could lead to the creation of artificial noses, much more technologically capable than the current model, which is just a pair of Groucho Marx glasses with a battery. All right, very good. Here's your next limerick.
My muscles are sore and they ache, so I might need a slithery break. I'll take scaly coils all slathered in oils. I'm getting massaged by a...
snake.
Snake, right. So I'm sure this has happened to you. You're watching, say, the movie Anaconda, or maybe that great tomb scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. And you say to yourself, sure, all those snakes are horrible and disgusting, but I bet they'd be therapeutic if a bunch of them were placed on my naked torso. We've all thought that. Well, if you have thought that, Israeli spa mistress Ada Barak is waiting for your call. For $80 only, Barak will plunk a whole mass of oiled and twined snakes of various sizes in your stomach, let them do their worst, massaging you with their slithery skin during their frenzied attempts at escape. The treatment is supposed to have, quote, calming and curative effects, but we're pretty sure that by that, they're referring to the way you feel when you get the hell away from the snakes. All right, here's your last limerick.
A ban on stale jokes I enforce. Let's stop why the long face at its source. No fillies and studs can't drink beery suds. This bar is closed if you're a...
horse.
Right! For 12 years, Peggy the Mayor has ended her day with a pint of beer and a packet of crisps with her owner at the Alexandra Hotel in Jarrow, England. But now that the hotel has new carpet, those days are over. Says landlady Jackie Gray, although she's probably cleaner than some of my customers, I had to put my foot down and show her the door. Gray insisted that she wasn't singling Peggy out unfairly, though. She pointed out that under the new policy, she has also turned away a rabbi, a priest, a duck, three different frogs, and a frayed knot. There you are.
Now the horse has to go to rehab.
Carl, how did Denise do in our quiz?
Denise was very good, Peter. Three correct answers, so she wins our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Crisp beer must be actually live. Smooth and delicious, precisely right. Lively golden, crystal and clear. The crisp refresher.
Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead, Peter. She has 5 points. Paul Provenza and Mo Rocca tied for second. Each has 2.
Mm-hmm. I see.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. Somebody bail me out.
All right, we've flipped a coin. Paul has elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The Federation of International Gymnastics released a statement saying they had determined that the women gymnasts from blank were all old enough to compete in Beijing.
Olympics.
No, the gymnasts.
Say that again.
The gymnasts from blank.
From China.
Right. China. A judge refused to grant a mistrial in the corruption case against Alaska Senator Blank.
Ted Stevens.
Right. A British man's day went from bad to worse when his third wife sent him divorce papers and the envelope was opened by blank.
Her new husband.
No, his fourth wife. Organizers announced that blank will play at the Super Bowl halftime show next February.
You.
No, I wish. Bruce Springsteen, this week marked the 50th anniversary of the date engineers and astronauts started working at blank.
NASA.
Right. Police in Washington State are searching for a man who robbed an armored car on Tuesday and then fled the scene in a blank.
Fled the scene in a police car?
No, in an inner tube. According to witnesses, the man went up to the armored car, grabbed the money, ran on foot to the nearby Skykomish River. He then jumped into a waiting inner tube and floated away in a westerly direction. He has not been found. Nonetheless, police leapt into the water in one of those little pedal boats, leading to the lowest speed police chase since the great supermarket scooter getaway of 1993. Carl, how did Paul do on our quiz?
He had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. He now has 8 points, and Paul briefly has taken the lead.
Well done. Fortunately for Paul, his handlers set the expectations really low prior to the event. So simply by getting 3 right, he seems to have won.
Wow, that's the first time that Carl's ever added a briefly.
This is not Carl Castle's first rodeo, to quote Dr. Phil. He knows what's coming. All right, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Search teams in California found the wreckage from Adventurer Blank's plane on Thursday.
Steve Fawcett.
Right. In the wake of the Marriott bombing, Britain and the UN ordered the children of international staff be evacuated from Blank.
Pakistan.
Right. Melamine-tainted milk from China forced the recall of 11 kinds of candy from cream egg maker Blank.
Cadbury.
Right. Condoleezza Rice praised Congress's approval of a controversial nuclear deal with Blank.
France.
No. India.
Oh, India.
Police did not file charges against a New Jersey man who tried to knock down a hotel door in order to blank.
Find his wife cheating on him.
No. To rescue a stolen hamster. For the first time since 1906, both baseball teams from blank made the playoffs.
Chicago.
Yes.
Double points.
The Chicago woman bought a house in Saginaw, Michigan for $1.75 on blank.
eBay.
Right. An Indian train station bedeviled by monkeys has hired a blank to combat the problem.
Ooh, it's one of those guys that plays the instrument. Well, the guy...
No. It's a guy... They hired a guy to dress up and walk around like a monkey to scare away the real monkeys. Monkeys in India aren't scared of much, but the sight of a full-grown 42-year-old man walking in all fours wearing a monkey mask and fake tail has them running for the hills. The monkey man, as he's known, boasted that he could scare away all the monkeys in a week, but the monkeys, seen watching from a safe distance, disagreed, saying, yeah, he's pretty scary. This is nothing to compare to when Carrot Top came through. Carl, how did Mo do on our show?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Mo has taken the lead.
How many, then, does Roxanne need to win?
4 correct answers.
Here we go, Roxanne. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Monday, the blank plunged over 700 points.
The stock exchange.
Right. Anger grew among drivers in southern cities as the blank shortage dragged on.
Gas shortage.
Right. Federal investigators confirmed that a train driver had blanked 22 seconds before last month's deadly train crash in Los Angeles.
Sent a text message.
Right. Researchers testing a tissue sample from the Congo says that it shows that the virus that causes blank has existed for more than a century.
AIDS.
Right. A driver in Britain was embarrassed when he crashed his car and the impact caused his blank to inflate.
His inflatable bed.
No, his inflatable person, his blow-up doll.
Oh.
Angry conservatives said that blank's upcoming book on Obama and black politicians meant she could not be an impartial mediator for the vice presidential debate.
Gwen Ifill.
Right. After she was spotted repeatedly driving over a pair of sunglasses, blank was arrested for a DUI.
Heather Locklear.
Yes, 2 armed robbers who hijacked a security van in Malaysia were forced to abandon half the money because blank.
Their getaway car was too small.
That's exactly right. Note to self, when robbing a security van, leave the Mini Cooper at home. That's a lesson that 2 thieves learned the hard way when the $1.3 million they stole would not fit into their tiny economy car. The local police chief had little sympathy, said, quote, I consider them quite stupid. Their planning was very short-sighted, unquote. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
Well, she needed 4 correct answers. Roxanne had 7 correct answers. Whoa. So, with 19 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Really well done.
Thank you.
Now, it just so happens that we have a winner, but in other parts of the news, it turns out that President Bush's disapproval rating became the highest ever polled this week. So we're going to ask our panelists in just a minute, how will President Bush win back the affection of the American people before he leaves office? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, catalog at lumberliquidators.com, the Music Performance Fund, striving to enrich lives by sponsoring thousands of public concerts in the United States, schedules at musicpf.org, the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Ann Cadigan. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our technical director is Lorna White. Other engineers include Robert Newhouse, Les Dolarchik, and Mohammed Mao. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton and Kim Gamble. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how will President Bush win America back? Paul Prevenza.
He is going to demand that Congress immediately approve a $700 billion opinion poll point bailout.
Roxanne Roberts.
In a sweet, if misguided, gesture, the president will help Americans with the bailout by sending every voter a plastic pail.
And Mo Rocca.
By executive order, he will authorize the immediate and permanent pullout of all Bushes from the White House.
And if President Bush does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Paul Prevenza, and Roxanne Roberts. And thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.